and raisins in it. Allergic to either?
Interested or allergic? And sugar.
Wait, are we on here still? Are we on? Oh, we're on. I'd like to call the meeting to order, the Finance Administration Operations Committee meeting. Madam Secretary, will you take the roll, please?
Yes, committee chair, Director Peterson.
Here.
Director Banks.
Here.
Director Gonzalez.
Here.
Chair Wolf.
Here.
We have a forum.
Thank you. Any public comment today? There being no public comment, we'll move on to directors. Number four, approval of the minutes of the Finance Administration's Operations Committee meeting in executive session held on March 14th. Do I hear a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Number five, executive director. I think, Christy, do you want to do an introduction here? Or do you want me to?
Sure. I'm happy to, if you'd like me to.
Sure.
Okay. We've got a couple of presentations here before we get into the meat of the Finance Committee meeting. First, I'm going to ask Mike Stone to just walk through, just as a reminder, our work plan of some of the strategic items that we've been discussing and have agreed to tackle in this committee over the upcoming year. As you recall, this is part of our effort to really make sure that the committees are weighing in on some of the more strategic questions that face us as an organization. So,
sure.
Mike, do you want to just walk us through?
As you recall, we do a work plan for each of our committees. This is the FAO work plan committee. Later today, we'll talk about the strategic advisory work plan as well. We had categorized things into three categories, 1 to 6 months, 6 to 12 months, and 12-plus months. You would have called that we've had previous discussions on cash handling procedures, which we will be revisiting again. But today, we will be focusing on three of the categories listed there: contract vendor diversity, workforce recruitment diversity, and procurement process. Procurement process we'll tackle this morning in the FAO committee. In a joint session, we will talk about contractor diversity and workforce diversity. And to reemphasize, a lot of these discussions are in multiple categories because we do expect them to be continuing and to be revisited at a later point in time.
Great. Thank you. Also, as a follow-up, and I know, Chair, you had asked me about this, as a follow-up to the conversation we had, I think, 2 months ago on procurement, I think it was 2 months ago, February, is that right,
yeah.
John? You had asked us to go back and take a look. We had recommended that one of the changes that we might recommend to help streamline the procurement process, which, as you know, has been challenging for us, is potentially looking at some different thresholds for items that actually come to board for approval. I think that we have developed some ideas in that regard. These changes will ultimately help the tollway save a significant amount of time and some money as well, which is always good on procurements. So, John, do you just want to walk us through? We have a little presentation here. We'll start with some of the things that we're already doing and then talk about that threshold that we think is the right place for us to begin the discussion.
Thank you, Christy. Good morning, directors. As you may recall, back in February, I presented some internal recommendations as well as our statutory changes that we are seeking to streamline the procurement process while maintaining the transparency and accountability that was a cornerstone of the procurement reform. We also briefly touched on the board delegating their approval up to a certain amount for the routine CMS-led procurements. Okay, so this slide should look a little bit familiar, as the majority of these items were discussed in February. But I'd like to hone in on the third item, the third bullet point, contract durations. In the past, it has been our practice to execute contracts with a three-year initial term and 2 1-year renewal options. Well, as all of you know, the process is long, and we are thinking of ways where we can be more efficient and get procurements done more quickly. So we are looking at longer term durations. All of our contracts have termination for convenience clauses in the boilerplate. So in the event that we need to cancel or terminate a contract, we have that option. So if we are in a longer term contract, say a 5-year contract, we could terminate that contract at any time if it's in the tollway's best interest.
So the idea here isn't so much necessarily longer terms. It's just we typically had 3 years with 2 1-year renewals. We almost always used all 5 years. But now those renewals are taking, as you recall, about 6 months each to execute, to get through the procurement process, sometimes longer. So what we are, what we started to do is move toward 5-year, you know, contract terms up front. We can always terminate if we don't see that there's performance there, but it does save us, frankly, a year on the back end of, you know, kind of paperwork and process to execute those 2 1-year renewals. So that is something that we, after the February meeting, have started to move forward on some of these contracts to just, you know, look at them really as a 5-year term up front to kind of save us on some of that back end paperwork.
Sure. Do you have a question?
Have you ever had to terminate any, for the termination of the convenience clause, have you ever had to exercise that?
Not that I recall.
Okay.
Not in the last year and a few months that I've been here. No.
Okay.
What's the argument against it, that the economy would change and that we would get a better or worse deal at the end of 3 years? I just can't think of what would be the arguments against doing it.
The only argument against it would be on the vendor side, that if he's trying to work his budget and he's thinking that he's got a contract for 5 years, how does he plan knowing that it's got an exit clause? And how does, in terms of the size of the contract, obviously if it was a small contract, it would have a big effect on the business owner, but the only negative I could see maybe is that you would get less people bidding it because of the uncertainty, do I got 5 years or do I got a 1 year, if I'm on the business side, that I would see, are we going to get less people or less vendors?
Yeah, that's a good point, Director. And to that end, a lot of times in these solicitations, when they are completed, let's say if you get only one or two bids, we are reaching out to the vendors that we expected bids from, and we're calling them to say, why didn't you participate in the solicitation? And, you know, we can always reconsider that option in the event that vendors say, hey, we just didn't want to commit to a longer term, we couldn't hold our pricing that long, you know, maybe a commodity-based item and tied to some index. So.
But it's my understanding that we have termination clauses in our 3-year plus 2
yes.
1-year renewal contracts, right?
That's correct, yes.
So the termination clause is there, the authority is there for us to terminate regardless of how that is structured. But you're right, there may be some that maybe it's highlighted more now because of the new contract term. It is something that we can watch and make sure that we're, you know, not seeing a drop off in the number.
And the flip side of my argument would be, if I were a vendor, I'd rather know I have it for 5 years, even if the markets were going to fluctuate, than to think I have to come back after 3 years and do our process all over again.
Yeah, it's not only frustrating us, but it's also frustrating to our vendors as well.
Yeah.
We hear that all the time.
And I think it's been pretty rare that we've ever terminated a contract, unless there's been some scandal or, you know, something that's come out against
sure.
the vendor.
And we typically extend the other 2 years
yeah.
as well.
Yeah, we typically use all 5 years, you're right. It's very unusual, and certainly we'd still have that flexibility to terminate for any
right.
of those reasons with this. So it just, I think, saves some processing time, significant processing time for those last 2 years. Almost half that time is used up in the process.
Please don't remind me. So this next slide should look familiar. I believe I showed you this slide back in November during your orientation. And it lists the different contract types that we utilize for all of our procurements. So let me run past these. The first two are CMS-like procurements. The first one, really, the CMS master contracts. That's where we leverage, or the state leverages, multi-agency use to obtain the lowest cost. We are required to to utilize these contracts as CMS has the procurement authority for these given transactions. CMS issues a competitive solicitation. They evaluate and award those contracts. The Executive Ethics Commission has to sign off on their contracts. Similar to the first one, the second one, CMS for tollway contracts, is where, again, CMS has the procurement authority to enter into these transactions. They procured on our behalf. They issue the competitive solicitation. They evaluate and award the contracts. So these are very similar, just so you know the difference. Master contracts give any state agency the opportunity to utilize it in any local municipality or government. CMS for tollway, those that are, when they procure a contract on our behalf, so it could be just for the tollway, it could be us and IDOT, where we had a contract a few months ago that was agency specific to us, IDOT, and DNR. It was for heavy equipment.
John,
yes.
Are those required to have a certain duration?
No. No, sometimes they'll have a one-year contract, a three-year, there's no set.
And they set that?
Yes. Yes, they do. We don't have any say in the matter, unfortunately. So third bullet point are for items that we have the authority to procure on our own. We issue the competitive solicitation, we evaluate the proposals, and we award the contracts. This is the item that we generally have a little bit more control of, and they're mainly for service type contracts. So the first two items here, just so you know, they are known as CMS-led procurements. Again, where they create a master contract or an agency-specific contract. Those are CMS-led procurements.
I'm sorry, I have one more question. Approximately how much of the contracting we do would fall into those first two categories? What percentage?
For goods and services, it would probably be about 70 to 75% of what we do. It's a high amount, maybe a little bit more than 75.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
a lot of the large dollars, though, would be on our own tolling right. contracts, because you're talking about things like the electronic tolling collection system and those
right.
types of things where, you know, we bid those, and those are of significant dollar.
Yeah, I'm thinking more in terms of the number of contracts, because
yes.
that's where the time
yes.
gets chewed up, no matter how many dollars there are.
So this slide here is a sampling of the routine commodity items that are procured on CMS-led procurements. These items are utilized in our day-to-day operations of our agency. So I thought it'd be important to tell you that these are mainly, I'd say all these are procured by the CMS master or CMS for tolling procurements.
So car parts, lubricants, HVAC supplies, plumbing supplies, just pretty typical.
Microwave.
Office supplies.
Microwave part.
Velcro.
Okay, so now that you have a better understanding of the CMS-led procurements and what they mean, I'd like to pick up our discussion where we left off in February about delegating your authority on these routine commodity items. You asked us to look at the data and recommend a reasonable amount for this delegation. Well, after analyzing the data, we strongly believe that delegating your authority of these routine items of less than $250,000 makes the most sense. All of these routine items are competitively bid, as I stated earlier. 91% of these CMS-led transactions are less than $250,000, but they account for only 14% of the total value of those CMS-led procurements. For example, we spend approximately, on average, $21 million a year on CMS-led procurements. That means that we have the authority to enter into approximately $3 million of the total value, or the board would still approve $18 million or of the $21 million. So what does this mean? It means that we can save over 1,000 hours per year and shave up to 4 weeks on the procurement process. This is definitely a game changer for us and makes us more efficient. We can then spend this additional time on other critical procurements that need to be completed. Okay, some safeguards that I wanted to mention, you know, with this delegation is, again, these are all competitively bid by CMS, whether they're master contracts or CMS for tollway. We will also submit monthly report of these transactions to you as we do our informational items. We will post these transactions on the tollway's website on a monthly basis. And we will seek the board's approval in the event that the cumulative amount of these items will need to exceed $250,000.
I think one of the, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Okay. So this is just a sample contract signature page, and I just wanted to show you all the individuals that need to sign our contracts. Of course, the vendor needs to sign it, our executive director, our state purchasing officer, who is employed by the Executive Ethics Commission, myself, and our legal department, you know, the Attorney General's Office to form in constitutionality. So we do have several eyes that are still looking at all of our procurements, whether we run the procurement or CMS runs the procurement. Okay?
So going back to the previous slide for a moment, I think we had a question, kind of a strategic question for the board about whether there were any kind of categories. You saw the page with all the different types of procurements and, you know, auto parts and other things that we handle through this process. Are there any particular types of items that you think they're, you know, deserve some special treatment or a carve out? Assuming that you, maybe we should take the first step and assume that you agree with our recommendation, but is there anything there that you think should be treated differently?
May I ask a question first of our institutional memory, Director Banks? In your memory, has it ever been lower than $250,000? So it's been this way for a long time.
We've always reviewed every contract, every purchase.
You say small purchase agreement, what is it, $34,000? Is that the threshold right now?
Yes.
So anything over $34,000 comes before the board?
That's correct, yes.
So $34,000?
Yeah, that's tied to the CPI index, so depending on the change, it'll change the small purchase threshold. Okay, so in closing, our request today adds the needed efficiency to our process while still maintaining the transparency of what we do. This is important to me, this is important to our agency, and this is important to maintain the integrity of our system out there. Any questions?
I think basically it's a pretty routine purchasing, and you know, for you and your staff, and you know, for some speed and efficiency and some cost savings. I mean, I'm willing to take a look at it. Maybe we can review it for a year, maybe implement for 1 year, and review it after. Or maybe 6 months, or maybe review it in 12 months and see how the process is going. It's 14% of the $21 million is about $3 million. $3 million or under would be the total, based on last year's procurement.
Well, the total would vary depending on the given transactions in the year, right?
Okay.
We're just saying based on that average.
Roughly.
Yeah. Roughly, yes, that's correct. I mean, you guys would still be, probably, you'd see 86% of the value of all of our CMS-led procurements that we've.
And I saw the contract. You signed off on it, and the executive director signs off on the contract.
Yeah, and the state purchasing officer for our agency, who's employed by the Executive Ethics Commission.
Three oversights, and still, even when it's done, then that still will be brought before the board. We would see what you approved.
Yes, you would. You would get a monthly report of those items. That's correct.
And I think the other key is, as long as that happens.
Yeah. I mean, this will definitely help our process out, and we're seeking, you know, statutory changes. We may or may not see that relief, and you know, any help that we can get would definitely make us more efficient.
So we'll we have some draft resolution language that we wanted to give everybody an opportunity to review. You probably have that at your places. This could be an item, and we would recommend that it is an item, even as early as this month's board meeting, if that's acceptable to everyone. We certainly can make any language changes if you see something that we've missed here, but it will give us some relief. And as I think I mentioned last month, we are starting to see, you know, procurement and John's team are doing a great job, but with a lot of, you know, a lot more time and effort involved in just getting things across the finish line, each procurement is taking more hours. So those extra 1,000 hours will really help us, you know, on advancing some of these other items. And we still will make sure to post all of these transactions online, so that the public, as it would be able to see our board agendas, the public would still be able to see, you know, everything that we're spending money on in this category.
Yeah. So. In the resolution, I won't speak for everybody, but I would like to see basically that this kind of, you know, sunsets the right word, but after 6 months or 12 months, it comes back before the board again for review.
Sure. I would like to ask for 12 months if possible.
Okay.
It just gives us a little bit more time. But we can certainly do that, and it, of course, if you see at a six-month period that you're seeing a lot of procurements on that list that are questionable to you, or you just want to revisit, we can of course revisit more quickly. But as far as language here, maybe we can add that 12-month language if that's acceptable.
That is to me.
Okay.
Yes, that's it. Yeah. I think I would agree to the 12 months. That would give us more time to analyze it. And as the chairman said, there is the internal controls here with, you see the oversight of the people that are looking at these procurements before it comes to the board. So with the oversight that these signatures and who's looking at these contracts, it makes me comfortable. And as long as Mr. Chairman Banks said that it's coming to the board after and we're looking at it, I would be comfortable with the $250,000 threshold as well.
Okay.
When we post these, would there be a place for people to make comments?
Right now, we were just planning on posting it as a PDF file.
I'm just wondering.
We certainly can create some room, but just the contracting process itself, the way things are posted, and do provide opportunities for people to provide comment, but we can take a look and see what.
I think,
that functionality.
It may be that nobody wants to comment, but in terms of our review, it would be great to have any external information that we can get, for whatever reason people comment on.
Yeah, it's something else, too. I probably should have mentioned this earlier. In any of those CMS-led procurements, whether they're master contract or CMS for tolling, those awards are all published on the State of Illinois' Procurement Bulletin, and any vendor or public has the opportunity to protest the award or ask questions.
But we will take a look at, and I'll let you know kind of what the resolution is, adding some type of functionality that would allow for kind of another public comment, opportunity when we post it. That's certainly not a problem.
Those are so routine, it's hard to believe anybody would.
I certainly haven't experienced, while I've been here, that anybody from the public has necessarily. It seems like the most opportunity for public comment would be when the award is made, that somebody would say, no, they shouldn't have gotten it, or that it was an unfair process, or whatever the comment, might be. But certainly we can, try to provide some space for that.
Should there be a cap on the percentage or on the dollar amount under 250, or is that too cumbersome to implement?
I think that would be fairly cumbersome to implement. It would mean, we'd have to just track it in a different way, and I'd be a little bit concerned about that. I think what we can do is we can track it and report back to see if we're tracking against that, 14%, 3 million, or if we look like we're exceeding that for some reason,
okay.
And certainly report that, maybe as regularly as monthly, but certainly, as frequently as we can report back to the board on how we're tracking against those percentages. Would that be kind of an acceptable way to?
Yeah, that's fine with me.
Yeah, okay, great, no problem.
Okay.
Thank you, John. John did a lot of work to get to this point, so thank you for all of your hard work.
Thank you.
So.
Okay, any additional items, or do we need to take any action on that for the full board for consideration, or is that the next meeting?
We'll have it on the agenda for the next meeting, and we'll make the 12-month sunset or review change that you recommended in the language, and just make sure that's there.
Okay.
I think that's it for my items. We've got another presentation that's coming a little later, right? So, as far as for my items, I think
Thank you.
That's it.
All right, we'll go on to finance. We have a renewal of liability insurance program, including commercial, general business, automobile, and excess. Maybe Mike, you could speak to that.
Thank you. Good morning, directors. Finance has one item for the committee this morning. Director Peterson mentioned it's a renewal of the OA's liability insurance program. It would include general liability, business, automobile, and excess liability. It's through the broker USI Midwest for a period of 1 year, which would begin June 1st and run through May 31st of 2013, for an estimated premium of $965,399. This differs slightly from the agenda. In the agenda, we had failed to include a tax that some of the carriers need to pay to the state of Illinois called $135. So the actual total is estimated to be or will not exceed $965,399. This is about a 3.4% increase over the current premium, and is the first increase in the premium since 2005. For the primary commercial liability and automobile liability policy, We have it with the insurance company of the state of Pennsylvania. It offers the first or primary layer of coverage of $20 million per occurrence. The premium for that coverage is $562,876. It includes coverage for employment practices, liability, and errors and omissions. And the coverage has a self-insured retention level of $250,000 per occurrence, which is the retention level that we've carried for many years. For the excess layers of liability, there's Star Indemnity and Liability Company, Arch Insurance, Great American Assurance Company, Axis Specialty Insurance Company, and RSUI Indemnity Company have offered policy limits that total in aggregate $130 million of protection beyond the primary layer of coverage. So the primary layer of coverage is $20 million that applies per occurrence. The excess liability coverage, if we were to exceed that amount, is for $130 million in total and is per occurrence and in aggregate. As I mentioned earlier, the total premium for all the coverages is estimated to be, or should, will not exceed $965,399. USI Midwest, as the primary broker, will receive $75,000 for the policy year. Crump Insurance Service acts as a wholesale broker for the excess liability policies, and they will receive about $32,000 in commissions. All of this is included in the premium. And Risk Management Solution is an MBE broker that works with USI Midwest, and they will receive commissions totaling about $33,700, which represents about 23% of the broker fees and commissions. We've always been quite satisfied with the policies and the coverages provided through this program, and Finance recommends this item be approved by the committee to be placed on the board's consent agenda.
Mike, can you speak to the increase in the premium and why that occurred? You said this hasn't happened since 2005. Has something happened in the industry or something?
We just, actually, there's been significant losses for the industry. John, our risk insurance manager, just noted yesterday that I think the loss ratio for the last year was 108%, which means losses exceeded premiums. Obviously, 100% ratio would be losses equal to the premium. So, our belief is that the insurance industry in general is raising premiums to attempt to offset those losses that have occurred recently.
Across the board. And the deductible, have you looked at that as far as raising the deductible, as far as the savings?
We have looked at that. Our feeling is that the difference in the premium savings associated with increasing the retention from $250,000 to $500,000 is too small to warrant taking the additional risk of having an increased retention. There was a proposal, I think, to raise the retention to $500,000, and if I remember correctly, it was improved by $130,000.
You got a new number of $129,000, which doesn't go very far. Okay. That increase in $200,000
would reduce the payment by
$129.
Oh, okay.
$129.
$129,000.
We do have some.
I guess I'm confused. So, if you raise the deductible from $250,000 to $500,000, it'll decrease the premium by
$129,000?
It'll decrease it.
Decrease it.
But the reason for not doing that is because then the retention goes up?
The retention goes from $250,000 to $500,000, okay. Meaning that our initial deductible is twice what it was on each occurrence.
So we got to retain X amount of dollars based on?
Well, we're just responsible for paying the first under $500,000 of the claim as opposed to $250,000 of the claim.
How many times was that exercise last year?
Well, I think we do have a history in here of the retention amounts. And the backup.
But it doesn't say what the payout was.
I think we do have that in here for previous policy years. In 2005-2006 policy year, the total retention paid out was $320,985. It's ranged from as low as $107,700 in the 9-10 year to $466,702 in the 2008-2009 policy year. The last 2 years, it's possible we could still have claims in the last year, particularly 2011-12, so that was, I wouldn't say that's complete.
These carriers are all in good standing?
They are.
They're all A-minus.
A-minus.
So, I am totally ignorant on this, but people have asked me why we only get one bid on a broker on this. It seems counterintuitive.
The procurement practice that CMS has approved for us to utilize is one in which we seek proposals from, we do request for proposals, and we do not establish an initial broker of record which would go out and get multiple quotations. When we issued that RFP the last time, the last couple of times, the incumbent carrier, the incumbent broker and carriers, our proposal have been consistently awarded as the successful proposal. We've interviewed or we've talked to other brokers. We had, I think, 6 different brokers come to the last vendor conference about why there weren't other proposals. The responses that we received were, one, we just can't be competitive with the current carriers and the current brokers package. And the other responses were precisely, I think, what others have suggested is, why don't you do an RFP that establishes a broker of record and then let the broker of record go out and get multiple quotations or try to give you, bring you a package. We have discussed that with Central Management Services, and to this point, their preference is that request for proposals be done as opposed to establishing a broker or pool of brokers that we go out and seek.
Well, I heard something a little bit different, which is that if you have a single broker and that broker goes out to different insurance companies, that the insurance companies are locked into a broker, and if they're locked into the broker that they think is the one that's going to get it, they're not going to talk to any of the other brokers.
So I think that's,
and that's why the other brokers can't be competitive. It's inherent in our process.
Because the carriers that are associated with that one broker
don't want to.
They want to utilize that current broker. And the option of procuring a broker of record through an RFP process is one that CMS has not allowed us to undertake. So
on what theory?
I don't know, John. Do you know the answer?
No, they've always had the philosophy. They've always had the philosophy that it should be a shotgun type of methodology, that you send it out and see what you get. One of the struggles we have is CMS doesn't buy much insurance, so they've never gone through this process. That we have, they don't buy liability insurance, for example, on a national, on a state basis. The only property insurance they buy is for the Thompson Center. That's it.
I would certainly insure that.
Well, I mean, all the bridges, everything else, but our needs are very different from what their experience is. However, because the law gives them the right to dictate to us, then we have to follow their procedures. The other thing that's happened in the insurance industry, while you may have XYZ broker who can go out to all these different insurance carriers and ask for a quote, the underwriters will usually go with brokers that they trust. And this is not a broker that they get regular requests for quotes from. They tend to give you at the hotel when you get the rate for the hotel. If you just walk in and it's the rack rate,
they'll give the broker the rack rate. They won't decrease it based on their experience, their understanding, and everything else of the risk that's involved. So it becomes very difficult to do. The other part of our program is we have a program that provides not just general liability, auto liability, but it also includes employment practices liability, which is usually a separate coverage, and errors and omissions, which is a form of D&O coverage for the board. That's very rare. You don't find that in any other policy. Usually that's a separate coverage that you have. We looked at New Jersey. They go out and they buy liability insurance, and that costs them $1.5 million for $100 million of coverage with a $2 million deductible. And they also buy errors and omissions or D&O coverage, and that costs another $300,000 for that same coverage. So we think that our package as a whole fits the tollway perfectly.
Something our options are, one of the options that we've considered and had discussions with Central Management Services in the past is to take an approach like we have had with underwriters or financial advisors, where we establish a pool of brokers and assign them different coverages to procure for the toll highway. We have at least two big programs, the property insurance program and the liability insurance program. We can certainly approach that again with Central Management Services.
But what's the incentive for them to come in with a low bid? I guess I don't understand in any of this what the incentive is for anybody to come in with a low bid. Doesn't feel as if there's any competition built into this process.
I think we're not precluding someone from going to other carriers, brokers to going to other carriers and finding better programs. It's the program that's been, the carriers that are willing to produce the most cost-effective program are currently locked into one broker.
But we select the broker of record.
Pardon?
But we as a tollway select that broker of record?
No, we don't select the broker of record now. We just ask the universe of brokers to bring us their best proposal.
So do we officially right now have a broker of record for the tollway?
We do not.
No.
We ask them to bring the best proposal and miraculously only one person comes back. That's the part I don't get.
I think the other carriers think it's a beauty contest possibly, and they think that the incumbent broker is going to have the best price and have the inside track with the broker that they're working with possibly.
I don't think it's the other carriers think that it's a beauty contest. I think the brokers look at the... And John, correct me if I'm wrong. But the other brokers look at the proposal, the proposal that's been provided by the broker, and they make a few calls to other carriers or to the carrier. Of course, they're not going to get the carrier that has the current broker. Mm-hmm. They make a few calls to the other carriers and realize they can't be competitive, so they don't submit a proposal.
We've been at the city the same way. We have incumbent insurance companies, but we have the brokers that are dealing with that, and we have to give a broker of record away, take it away from those incumbents to another company so they could go shop it around, because they've already given us our price, but they can't shop around till we give them a broker of record to go ahead. So now they can even talk to those same incumbent insurance companies. But as long as we don't release that broker record to the new one, they can't go to like the Travelers. If we're already with Travelers Insurance with the current broker, until we give the new broker a letter from the city, he won't go to Travelers. But yet he can go to Travelers and come back with a better price.
So I know we have on our strategic items insurance as a discussion, which we've talked about before. You've heard the challenge that we have with getting CMS to agree to a different way of doing this, and right now they are the ones who can tell us how we're supposed to procure something. But I do think that if through a board discussion, the board made a determination that they wanted to do something differently or try a different strategic approach, that would give us another opportunity, I think, to go back to CMS and say, our board really would like us to do this differently and see if there's a different result. I mean, we do know